This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hey everybody, this is Lance Ray. I'm the CIO at Epstein Becker Green, based in New York. I'm a longtime member of ILTA. I was part of the original open source technology group, which became Emerging Technology. Always had a passion for this kind of stuff. And today I'm going to be talking with a couple of smart guys about follow-up session to the August 2017 ILTACON session in Vegas called What's New in Microsoft Server Platforms. We're billing this follow-up as What's New in Microsoft Solutions, because we're not just concentrating on servers, but also Microsoft Solutions in general. With me today is Nilesh Mehta and Patrick Sklodowski. Nilesh is a CEO at Ingenious Solutions. He's got 20 years in IT. He's a Microsoft Solution Architect, VTSP for 6 years now. He's got two kids. And to lend you some tech cred, he's a big Star Wars and Star Trek fan, and he wishes to go where no man has gone before. Patrick Sklodowski is a principal with Square 10. He's been working in legal for about 15 years, in IT for 20 plus years. He has two kids. In the world of not really tech cred, he likes rainbows and unicorns, and he really dislikes mean people. I've actually heard him mention that to me before.
I knew you weren't going to let that go.
In the spirit of disclosure, I asked both of them to give me 1 feat of strength, but they opted for going with a more mundane technology or rainbow comment. We're going to jump right into the topics here. And the first thing we're going to talk about is comparing the SharePoint features on-premises versus online. And Nilesh, I'm gonna ask you about that. Can you just start off? What are the differences in the features, and why would a firm go one way or the other?
Thanks for the question, Lance. Here's the latest and greatest. So from an on-prem version perspective, the latest and greatest version that we have from Microsoft is SharePoint 2016. It's currently available in two flavors, the standard and the enterprise license. With the previous versions, we used to have a free version of SharePoint, which Microsoft kind of took away at this point, right? From a platform perspective, the SharePoint 2016 architecture is very close to the SharePoint Online architecture. Microsoft has tried to keep them both on the same level so that it's easier for customers to migrate from an on-premise solution to an online solution at some point in the time, right? That's where ultimately Microsoft wants everybody to go to. But with the previous versions, it was just very painful to either go through an upgrade process or even migrate to SharePoint Online solution. So with SharePoint 2016, Microsoft has taken the same architecture as its SharePoint Online version and tried to make it very close where customers can use them together in a hybrid mode with similar benefits and similar user experience, or migrate at some point to SharePoint Online. But from a differences perspective, here are some of the key things that I can think about that SharePoint Online in many ways brings that SharePoint On-Prem doesn't have, right? So one of the benefits that SharePoint Online brings is the accessibility from anywhere, anytime, right? It's a cloud-based solution. It's a SaaS solution, which means by default, you can access it from anywhere, anytime, supports multiple browsers and all the device types that you are looking for at this point. With SharePoint On-Prem, you would have to configure it to be available externally. You would have to go through hoops of security settings to make sure that you are not to be affected by putting a server out on the internet in some ways, right? The other difference is that new features are very easily and very fast rolled out to the SharePoint Online version. Microsoft kind of releases new features almost every week, or hot fixes and patches to the platform literally almost every other day as necessary, right? Whereas with the SharePoint On-Prem solution, you still have to wait for hot fixes or patches or service releases to come out, which come out quarterly as community updates or annually as service releases, to get even a solution to an existing issue or to get access to new features, right? Integration with other tools in the SharePoint Online world, Microsoft has provided so many more tools in the cloud version that are not available with on-prem at this point. For example, integration with Dell, Yammer, also additional features like modern pages and communication site templates, right? So new things are coming up much faster with the cloud version than it will be with the online version.
Now, one thing that's common with law firms and probably anybody that uses SharePoint is they don't just get SharePoint, but they get some other product, third-party product that they bolt on. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do something like that, and I think in particular, Handshake, or a workflow solution. If you're going to do one of those, do you need to go one way or the other, or is hybrid the solution? What are the options there?
That's a great question. Based on what I've heard, specifically Handshake as a company was bought over by another organization earlier this year, actually right around the time when we had the ILTACON conference. It is my understanding that Handshake still nicely supports the SharePoint on-prem version. I have not heard of any customer yet take advantage of Handshake with the SharePoint online platform yet. Obviously, it also remains to be seen whether how far the new organization is going to invest in Handshake and where does it go from here. At some point, it has to support the SharePoint online version because that's where most of us are going, including some law firms around the country. But at this point, I haven't heard of that being an actual scenario that implemented so far right now.
What's your feeling on the uptime and the stability of SharePoint Online? I mean, I can tell you, I subscribe to the Office 365 admin dashboard, and so every once in a while, a banner pops down from the top of my phone saying something like degraded performance on SharePoint investigating, that kind of thing. That always gives me a little bit of pause.
I agree. That is kind of scary. However, I think that's where Microsoft being transparent with their customers saying, every time there's an issue, we are going to be proactive and let you know something's going to happen, rather than you getting frustrated and saying, I had no clue this could happen, right? So I think Microsoft just being very proactive. Now, degraded is a very loose term, but it could be anything in the platform that could be having an issue. SharePoint, again, has tons of bells and whistles in there, features in there, anywhere from authentication to document management to calendar solutions, integration exchange. So I don't think that it is that big of an issue. I have yet to see a complete crash down on the entire platform, right? So even when you have degraded performance, it kind of means related technologies like Exchange or any form of connectivity or some kind of issue. But end users, as far as I know, are constantly able to still log in. They're able to do their document management solutions. They're able to still work and perform their day-to-day jobs without any impact from a performance perspective. I have worked personally with customers that have 1,000 employees on the cloud and 50,000 employees in the cloud, right? And I have not seen a situation where a company has come back and said, I was down, especially from a SharePoint perspective, right? I was down for 2 hours and I couldn't do any form of work. We heard that with Exchange, I think, once or twice, but we definitely have not heard that from a SharePoint perspective at all.
And is there any performance issues that you'd get, that you'd have to worry about?
As before we move into the next topic, just to add to what Nilesh said, that's a really important point that you guys brought up on the dashboard and the graded performance. Across all of the Office 365 services, the key is to really look and see why they're telling you performance is degraded, because even the most minor feature being unavailable, maybe even the admin console or one specific place in the admin console being unavailable, Microsoft, in their drive to be transparent, will mark it as degraded. So it's really critical to understand what's actually been affected and not just assume that degraded means your users are having any issues.
Okay. I concur.
Yeah, so it's a qualified notification, huh?
Yep.
Yes.
And human nature probably means you're going to look at it from the worst case scenario, and it might not be.
Well, I'd say it's, again, unfortunately, based on many experiences that we've had with Microsoft in the past, right, and the servers, we all know how often servers used to crash in the past, right? And I think it's just our experience over the years that kind of makes us get scared when we see a message like that. But I think, as Patrick said over here, and, you know, as I mentioned before, it's more about transparency with the new management and new, you know, leadership at Microsoft. It's just being proactive and telling them, we know about this before you know about it, and we are already working on this.
Yeah, and I think perhaps Microsoft has to get over a little bit of a bad taste from their initial forays into this, where I heard, and it was all anecdotal, but SharePoint in the cloud, when it was initially offered, did not perform well at all. So you had to
would have been many,
infrastructure behind it now.
As they say, it would have been many, many moons ago.
Right. 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 And you did mention there's a slight feature difference. Well, obviously they're putting new features in the cloud, but is there anything glaringly, you know, obvious or something that you really need to be cognizant of if you're going to make a decision one way or the other?
I think from a business functionality perspective, most of it remains the same. I think the key things where I really worry about is, you know, the whole external sharing experience, especially, you know, law firms and stuff. You need to work a lot with your customers and stuff like that, right? In many situations with on-prem, we had solutions where we could do forms-based authentication and allow, you know, we could create accounts for our customers and say, here's your username, password, log in and just start collaborating, right? With the cloud version, it's a little bit different, right? And there are different options available. That is one area where I think Microsoft can get a little bit better in terms of how sharing works with external vendors or external customers or any person outside the company. I think that's where Microsoft has a little bit of room to get better. And obviously any form of custom development, right? So law firms, just like any other firms, have a lot of different needs for custom solutions that have to be built on the SharePoint platform, whether it's for business process or it's for BI dashboard, other solutions that they need. With the on-prem solution, we still have a lot more control like we did in the old days, and you can continue to do that, go down that path. With the SharePoint online version, there is a new governance in place and you have to play within those boundaries. Doesn't mean that it's all bad, but it's definitely something that is a change in way developers have to think about how they write solutions and how it's supposed to work within the platform. At the end of the day, it is still a shared platform that you're sharing with hundreds of thousands of other customers. And that's where Microsoft keeps their boundaries, saying, we'll only allow you to do so much in this platform because you could potentially impact somebody else in some ways.
Thanks, Nilesh. You know, let's talk a little bit about security and compliance. And Patrick, I'm going to look to you for some answers on this. I'm going to throw out a whole bunch of acronyms, and then I'm going to let you go, all right? You have DLP, IRM, MFA, MDM. I can tell you just from my own standpoint, I've leveraged a few of these Microsoft services, I'll call them, in my network here. I was impressed with them. They're fairly bare bones, but you know, they get the job done really well. How do these different services, and you might have to touch on them one at a time, affect your decision to set them up in your network?
Yeah, we'll go through our acronym soup here. When you look at Microsoft's, from that hybrid perspective, security and compliance, they're really trying to build ways for on-prem to leverage more of these services built in the cloud and to reduce the amount of on-prem infrastructure, configuration, and management that's required. Leveraging the cloud, but not necessarily pulling away from your internal infrastructure. So you're getting the benefits of both worlds. A lot of firms that we work with have stayed away from the cloud for compliance reasons or their client reasons. Clients won't allow them to move to the cloud. So as you talk through those acronyms, things like digital loss protection, information rights management, multi-factor authentication, and mobile device management, they do all play into the security and compliance world. On a digital loss prevention perspective, right now, my view is those features are really evolving in Office 365 and they're becoming very powerful. I haven't seen them come back on-prem too heavily yet. I think it's still very much under development. But in the Office 365 world, there's now a consistent dashboard and a consistent place where you can configure digital loss prevention policies across most of the Office 365 services, Exchange Online, OneDrive, and SharePoint. And those features have really been evolving over the past 6 months in particular. There's just been an explosion there. On the rights management side, it's now Azure Rights Management. That product integrates pretty well with the Office suite, Office 2016 on-prem, where you can secure your documents and you can say, this email should only be read by someone internal. This Word document can be accessed by anyone internal or maybe some specific internal people or external users. A really big question though with the information rights management is how well it's going to interact with document management systems. And more the document management systems are also trying to build these features in. So there's a little bit of competition of who's going to win in the legal world. What product is going to be more effective? What's going to be better from a user perspective? And if we use some of the Microsoft technologies, is this going to conflict with or cause us problems in the document management world? We haven't seen many clients use IRM. We haven't seen many law firms use IRM, and that's been from Microsoft, and that's been one of the biggest reasons why is always that question of how does this interact with my DMS. Multi-factor authentication has really improved since Server 2016. Before Server 2016, you know, Microsoft acquired PhoneFactor many, many years ago, and it felt like a bolt-on product, a little bit more than a completely integrated product. If you wanted to use multi-factor authentication on premises for your VPN, your Citrix environment, any other access method, you always had to have a on-prem server. The on-prem server interacted with Azure, but all Azure was really doing was sending emails on the behalf or sending text messages on behalf or making the phone call for you to, you know, answer the phone and say, yes, this is me who initiated this logon. And what that meant was you were doing a lot of the management of the server on-prem and not taking advantage of the cloud-based features, where all of Microsoft's competitors were really pushing towards cloud-based management and a full cloud-based service. Once Server 2016 came out, Microsoft ADFS, which is their SAML implementation, now integrates directly with MFA in the cloud. There's a new add-on that can be used with Microsoft's network access protection, which includes Radius, the Radius server. And that add-on will also integrate directly with Azure MFA. So you really no longer need that on-prem server to manage multi-factor authentication. And it's really driving the Microsoft MFA world into the cloud.
And so Patrick, where do you think MFA still needs to improve? And I guess any surprises you see in the MFA world right now with Microsoft MFA?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that Microsoft is still catching up to some of their competitors on the user interface and ease of use from a user perspective. As an example, Duo has a great user experience when you're first registering and getting set up. And I think Microsoft is lagging a little bit behind there. From just a core functionality, multi-factor authentication is multi-factor authentication. But where all these vendors are moving is to becoming a single location for single sign-on and your cloud single sign-on, where it's integrating with all of your cloud-based applications and providing MFA, multi-factor authentication, across the board. From a surprises perspective, really no negative surprises, but where I think Microsoft is doing a great job is the integration with Azure MFA Intune for mobile device management and their conditional access platform. So when I'm really using the bundle of those three, I can get very complex with how I'm giving people access to resources. I could say that if someone is connecting to a resource from a corporate device that is managed by Intune and is compliant with all of my policies, make the login experience less intrusive. Maybe I don't require MFA. But if they're connecting from a device which is not managed by Intune and is not on the corporate network, always prompt them for MFA. And that combination of Microsoft being able to link the mobile device management to MFA and that conditional access is really powerful. And a lot of other vendors don't have that. So many of the traditional multi-factor authentication vendors, they can do some type of a device identity based on a certificate, but they're not doing a true health check against the device.
Right. It gives you a little bit of that network access control that is popping up in security audits more and more often from clients.
Yeah. And the ability for that whole ecosystem to work together is really where that power is coming from.
Yes, it's good. I mean, we're using MFA here, and I was pleasantly surprised by it. And again, on the iPhone, once you learn to do that, that hard press and approve can be pretty quick.
Yeah, and so Lance, in your case where you're using the on-prem MFA server, a lot of it is still managed on-prem. And in the future, if and when that server becomes deprecated, you know, you'll have to move into the cloud, the full cloud world, which will require a little bit of user interaction and things like re-registering their account potentially just in the Azure world, or reinstalling the mobile device, reconfiguring the mobile device on their phone. Whereas if anyone is not yet using Microsoft MFA, they really should be driving right to the cloud world, so they won't have to make that transition later.
And that's production ready. There's no real risk in going that route if you're greenfield and starting out.
Absolutely. It's production ready, and it's the same infrastructure that Microsoft uses to provide MFA to their cloud-based services. It's just extended to, you know, work with on-prem through that integration of things like Radius and ADFS.
Yeah, and it brings up something that's happening right now as Microsoft transitions more of their product base to, you know, to the cloud or to services, is you have to make that decision. Are you ready to go? And is the solution ready to go? And I think with MFA, at the time that we implemented it, it was much safer. I don't know if the feature set was ready in the cloud for us to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a little bit of growing pains that you do experience, right?
With everything.
Right. And, you know, and so I'm looking at the alphabet soup that you were just talking about. So you did touch on the MDM when you mentioned that, and Microsoft's MDM is Intune. Is there anything more you wanted to say about that before we move on to some authentication information?
Some of the newer features with the MDM, in addition to that conditional access from the on-prem perspective, it's really evolving in just the Office 365 world as well, down to an application level. They finally have moved Intune fully into the Azure portal. It was always sort of a unloved stepchild portal, in my opinion, from a management perspective. And now it's moved into the full Azure portal, which has been a good change. And the ability to now manage access to some of the individual Microsoft services has also become interesting. I can provide access into Exchange Online that is a little bit more lenient than the access I'm providing into SharePoint Online. So maybe I only let someone into SharePoint Online if they're meeting all those conditions of a managed corporate device, but they can get to email from, you know, a web browser on any computer.
Yeah, and that Azure portal looks a little nicer too. But you're right, you get a little more granularity. It feels like it's a little bit more of a control panel than what we had before.
Yeah, and not dependent on Microsoft Silverlight like the old Intune portal.
Let's stick with the authentication a bit and talk about AD Federation.
When you look at moving anything to the cloud, especially the Microsoft world, you really have to focus on how people are going to log in. And this is a really large conversation in and of itself, but it's the starting point for how you move into that hybrid environment from a user perspective. It's very easy to go spin up servers in Azure and treat them like part of your infrastructure. But once you have users logging into the Microsoft portal for SharePoint and integrating that back to SharePoint Online or Exchange in a hybrid mode, you have to address how users are connecting in. You know, the first step in that roadmap is getting your Active Directory synced out to Azure Active Directory. Azure AD is the backbone for user authentication in the Microsoft cloud, just like Active Directory or AD Directory Services is the backbone for everything in your on-prem world.
How big of an effort is it to make that move, Patrick? I mean, in a general sense.
That's a good question. In a general sense, the synchronization is really easy. It's a couple hours of effort. The challenge is whether or not you need to do any cleanup in Active Directory to make sure that things sync properly. And for some firms, if AD is very clean, no special characters used in any names anywhere, it's minimal effort. If you have a very complex environment and lots of disabled accounts for users that have left that have not been cleaned up, it can require, you know, a couple days to weeks worth of effort. There is some automation of it, and there are some pieces where it's safe to just let the automation perform that fix itself. But there's a lot of areas where you really need to do some investigative work. Once you have your accounts out in Azure Active Directory, we can authenticate a couple of ways. We can synchronize our passwords up there, but really where firms need to start to look is federation through the SAML protocol, which is simple authentication markup language. And that's really become the standard authentication protocol across the internet. That can be done with Microsoft services on-prem using Microsoft ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services. That's the on-prem version of ADFS that allows you to federate with Office 365. Or it can be done with other solutions that provide that federation. And there's probably, you know, 100 of them out there today. The Microsoft solution is probably the most straightforward to set up, though. The reason that this federation becomes important is all of my authentications at that point will really happen against my on-prem Active Directory. So I now have a single account, a single password, and a single location for authentication. And once I authenticate, I'm simply passing a token back to the service that I'm trying to connect to. I'm not using my password across the internet. So it simplifies the number of passwords for users. It can simplify the experience. That's not always the most simple experience, but we're in a few years, we'll probably be in a place where those authentications are very seamless and the users really don't know that it's happening. And they're just automatically connected to the services they're using in the cloud, whether it's Microsoft Cloud or other third parties.
Nalesh has been patiently waiting in the background. I'm going to throw a less of a softball, more of a hardball at you, Nalesh, and say, you know, the things that Patrick's just been talking about regarding authentication and federation, how do they affect Exchange, if you're going Exchange online versus on-premises, or things like SQL, if you want to be, you know, pretty, what I think is bold and start running SQL instances up in Azure?
I think from an Exchange perspective, it doesn't really make a big difference. Honestly speaking, most of our customers end up going to the cloud first with Exchange as a service, always, right? So when they are building these solutions, the very first thing they're testing with all of these, you know, solutions, whether it's multi-factor and authentication, something like that, it's always being tested with Exchange first. SharePoint actually comes second in line always, right? So companies are generally preparing best for Exchange and taking advantage, considering that as a priority when they're looking at all of these solutions for authentication.
And that brings up a good point. So if you're a firm who's purely on-premises right now, what is your initial play if you want to start migrating workloads to the cloud, particularly to Microsoft Azure or to a Microsoft cloud-based service?
It's mostly done any different ways that you can think of. Many companies just want to start doing small things first with the cloud because they're still testing to see if their data is going to be secure, what's the user experience, you know, what kind of concerns they have. And they will go with something small just to test out the platform, which means non-critical data, non-critical solutions, maybe collaboration, right? In some situations, then SharePoint comes first and says, okay, let's just put documentation and collaboration up there that's not critical to business and let teams work together from there. On the other hand, companies, you know, like I said before, you know, Exchange, in our experience, has been one of the first things that people have gone with because it's been easier to move forward with. It's very simple in the sense that you know at the end of the day that all you have to do is move your email and your users and your mailboxes to the cloud. It's a one-time thing. When you're done, you're completely done. There's nothing else to worry about. But when it comes to SharePoint, people have critical data in there in terms of business processes and, you know, documents that may have, you know, HIPAA information or, you know, PCI information, stuff like that. That's when people start thinking about how do I get this over to SharePoint online, right? And planning for the new world in terms of how the topology is going to be set up, how do they build custom applications and stuff like that. It varies in different ways, but you know, I think the answer remains the same. You know, authentication and federation and all those things are primarily done upfront, with most of the times Exchange being the primary, you know, application.
Yeah, I agree with Nalesh. It needs to be at the beginning of your roadmap. You can move to federation further down the road. But the more you focus on those up front, the better and more consistent the user experience is. And in the Microsoft world, once you have that, the account synchronized and preferably federation, you can get a very seamless experience, whether you're using SQL on-prem and in the cloud or the hybrid SharePoint in a hybrid mode where I'm accessing some of the data on-prem and some in the cloud, based on the way that Microsoft has built this and is building it into the operating system. As you get more towards Windows 10, to further complicate, the absolute best experience is when your Windows 10 machine is part of your Active Directory domain, is also what's called Azure Active Directory joined. So your machine is effectively joined to two places, and you have your Active Directory account synchronized up to Azure Active Directory.
And why is that the best experience, Patrick?
The reason that's becoming the best experience is it's getting to a world where it's a what I'll call a seamless sign-on. So we have same sign-on. I have the same username and same password in multiple places. I have a single sign-on, which is the same account is used for multiple places, but I may have to type in my username and password multiple times. And then a seamless sign-on, where I've logged onto my PC once, and I go to use the cloud application or other application, and it just works. We've been living in a seamless sign-on world with inactive directory since it came out. Exchange, when I open up Outlook, should always be a seamless sign-on. It just works. Now we're extending that to these external solutions through things like Azure Active Directory Federation Services and the SAML protocol.
Okay, so yeah, in many ways, the infrastructure behind all this stuff is invisible to the user. They're just using their apps the way they always were. Just the locations of where the data are or live can be different.
Yep. I think gone are the days where we had to use VPN connectivity to the environments, right? I mean, I don't need to have a machine that has a pre-configured Cisco client that connects me to my network at boot time and have to worry about authenticating stuff, right? I mean, this is cloud. So no matter wherever my machine is, as long as I'm able to get to the internet, I can always authenticate from wherever I am then.
So I want to turn to Nilesh and ask you a question about searching through data, particularly with regards to SharePoint on-premises, in the cloud, and in hybrid mode. What are some of the things you need to look for? How do you make that experience work well? Because being able to find your data is kind of the whole reason we're using these platforms.
That's a great question. So, and the reason that's really good is because based on everything that we've seen in the last couple of years, we know that for the next 5 years at least, right, most of the organizations are going to be in a hybrid mode because they are not yet 100% ready to just switch over and completely go to the cloud in general, right? There are many, many organizations that have multiple terabytes of data that will still, you know, stay on-prem, or half of it will go online and the other half will stay on-prem because of either, you know, being, like I said before, you know, PCI or HIPAA or some kind of critical business application that they're just not comfortable taking to the cloud at this point. So with that in mind, Microsoft has definitely taken that into consideration and allows you to build a search experience that will allow you to bring, so when you go to like a SharePoint online site and a search center and you search for information, it will allow you to crawl both your on-prem data and online data and surface it from the same search results panel, basically, right? It generates the entire index, the whole processing, and the index is actually generated at the cloud level. Even though you have a server on-prem, which is a SharePoint server, when you build the hybrid solution, all of your data is indexed at the cloud level. So you don't have to worry about performance and dedicating search servers and stuff like that on-prem. Microsoft's taking care of that for you, basically, right? The benefit that brings for end users is they get unified search results, right? Search relevance, ranking, and refiners. Microsoft take care of all of that from a SharePoint search online perspective. As you all have heard, you know, Microsoft Search has grown a lot over the last few years. It bought a company called Fast Search, I think about 7 years ago. And since then, that has become the basic and the core search engine for the SharePoint platform. Microsoft has taken that to SharePoint Online and all the benefits it brought and enhanced beyond that to make it much more robust, much more scalable, and much more user-friendly from a search perspective. So that's one way of doing this. You can also do federated search results with the SharePoint Online thing, but the preferred way is definitely to go to the cloud hybrid search because it just makes life much easier from a usability perspective and finding information perspective.
And so, Nilesh, in that scenario, does your indexes live in the cloud?
Yes. The index actually lives in the cloud.
And how much care and feeding does the SharePoint indexing or the search take? I mean, do you have to have a fair amount of experience to be able to administer that and tune it?
No, it is actually, to be honest, very, very simple, right? Again, if, like I said, in the on-prem world, you would have to really think about how big my index is going to grow, what is going to be the impact on it from a SQL perspective or a SharePoint perspective. None of this, you don't have to worry about any of those things. Microsoft fine-tunes it with their platform behind the scenes. All you have to do is build the connectors. You have to build your result, search crawls and search scopes and result scopes. And that's it. I mean, you're done. The only thing that you may want to think about is there are certain conditions that apply, you know, certain things that are not supported, but kind of deprecated when it comes to, features that work differently from the SharePoint on-prem solution. I guess some of them are just terminology changes. In the old world, with on-prem, we had custom search scopes that were built with SharePoint 2010 and 2013. In the new world, they're called result sources, right? Just a difference in name, but functions very similarly. Promotion and demotion of search results was again also a SharePoint 2010 feature. In the online world, you use result sources to promote and demote search results. So minor changes over here and there that you just have to be familiar from a technical, I guess, terminology point of view. But other than that, very user-friendly. Search also in the online world is managed at two different levels. You can manage it at the SharePoint tenant level, and every site collection has its own search settings available now, which is much better than the on-prem solution and gives control at a site level to end user. So I, as a site collection owner, can build my own search scopes and search results much better. Whereas in the on-prem world, I would have to go back to like a farm admin at some point to do something complicated. So I think overall much easier to use and much more scalable now.
So yeah, Nilesh, and I guess I have a slightly nerdy question, because whenever I think of search and indexing, I think of IOPS and whether you have fast disk or not. Is that a decision that you need to make or have control of when your indexes live in the cloud?
Nope.
Whether
nope.
They're on a flash drive?
Nope. Microsoft, again, has taken care of that whole platform in general. Again, as I mentioned before, there are organizations with terabytes and terabytes of data, all the way up to potential 40, 50 terabytes of data, and Microsoft knows the amount of collaboration that happens on this platform. They have that factor. They're constantly working day in and day out to upgrade their environment as necessary. But as an end user, you shouldn't have to worry about the fact that if I'm going to bring 5 terabytes of data between my on-prem and online, what is the impact it's going to have on my IOPS? That's nothing that you have to worry about. Microsoft takes care of all of that for you.
I really like the way that Nilesh started that description, talking about that bridge to the cloud, and you know, Microsoft knows people are not just going to move directly to the cloud, especially if you're a larger firm. You know, their very publicly stated goal is to really be that hybrid company that you can use on-prem, you can use in the cloud, and they realize that the path to getting people into their cloud, which is where they want people to move, is by enabling all this hybrid functionality. And since we're using Microsoft servers and Microsoft email and Microsoft databases for all these things, they're really finding great ways to link on-prem and the cloud together. And that path has really been proving out over the past couple of years, and seems like it's really going to continue.
Yeah, you know what, Patrick, that's a great way to kind of wrap up our conversation. It's been a little bit, we've been bouncing around to a few different things, but I really appreciate both of your passion and your knowledge for these topics. If you have any questions or comments about any of the items we've talked about, the contact information for both Nilesh and Patrick will be in the podcast release notes. And anything good pops up there, I'll keep an eye out and open it up for conversation, probably in the Windows server listserv, since that probably most closely aligns with where this topic was at Ulticon. Nilesh, Patrick, thanks a lot for the time. And I look forward to talking to both of you more.
Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.